Dad Bod Rap Pod. We, like all of you listening, are going to die.
Strong start.
Yeah.
Happy Sunday, guys.
Happy Sunday. We're here recording on a Sunday, working on the Sabbath. It is us, the Dad Bod Rap Pod. I mean, I'm not trying to be morbid just to be morbid, but I think that we, especially in this kind of fake live forever society, we really get bummed out about death, but it's like, you're going to fucking die. Like, off top, that's the one thing that's absolutely going to happen to you.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody on Friday, and they were like, death, and we were like, yeah, those are the only certainties, death and taxes. He's like, I haven't paid my taxes in like 20 years, but I'm definitely going to die.
It's true. The Grim Reaper outpaces the IRS by a great margin. My name is Damone Carter, a.k.a. Dem One, Struggle Rap Artur. I'm going to die, just not today. Hopefully not today. Joined by Nate LeBlanc. Nate, what would be your morbid death moniker?
Oh, that's a good one.
Necronate.
Necro.
Necro. Just can find
counting Nate Crows.
My horrorcore adjacent raps on Uncle Howie. No.
No.
Yeah, that'll work. I don't know. I never really think about rap monikers.
No.
They did one of those stupid things like, what's your favorite fruit and the last reason
that
you took painkillers is your band name.
Oh, right.
And mine was Nectarine Recreational.
Off top.
I thought that was pretty
funny.
That is your
indie band.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, performing next week at Cafe Stritch.
I'd probably make it just Nectarational, though.
Nice.
Oh, Nectarational. Nice. And we're also joined by Dave Ma. Dave, your horrorcore name would be Dave Macabre.
Nice.
Thank you. Be here all week.
Damn, dude.
I feel set up for that one, guys.
You did. Shut it down.
You did. Thank you. That's been this week's episode.
It's good to be here, guys. Too hope I don't die tonight, Damone. So we're on the same page.
That's
here.
Usually not your operating. Usually when you start out a night, you're like, we'll
maybe.
See.
Yeah. I just died in your arms tonight.
Oh, my God.
You never know when you're going to go, you know?
Oh,
I hear
man.
She's a bitch.
So much death in hip-hop. Hip-hop is that one, not one genre, it's one of the genres that, like, really, like, keeps death right there.
At
right,
the forefront. Right.
At the forefront of
it's
everything.
It's interesting. Keep, especially it keeps when death there and keeps dudes young, though. You know what I mean?
Fake young. Yeah, for sure.
Well, there's so many, like, major figures who died.
Yeah, so there's this idea of, like, rapper mortality, right?
Of
like
course.
This idea that, yeah, like, a lot of, I guess like a fair amount of our icons are, like, already dead, and guys weren't in their 60s. Like
died really young.
Like, we don't have
violent deaths.
Yeah.
Right.
And so
right.
So hip-hop has a very close relationship with death, also
like
a product.
It's the cousin.
That would
life
be sleep. And I got a lot of sleep's cousin this morning. Totally missed the World Cup final that I swore I was going to wake up to watch.
Pretty exciting. The big thing on the Twitters today in our Dad Bod Twitter feed was that Megan Rapinoe, the hero of the World Cup, quoted Nipsey Hussle lyrics in her IG caption.
She is just killing it.
And it's like Megan, you have an invite to the cookout. You don't have to. She's just pouring it on.
I saw this.
I'm here at Essence Fest right now celebrating my. I'm like, Megan, you got it. We rock with you. Come through.
I saw this hilarious image this morning. They replaced all the 50 stars on the flag with that image of her holding her arms out, like 50 of them. It was like
that's
so
perfect.
Tight.
I love it. No, this is.
I'm a full bandwagon fan now because I watched about 20 minutes.
No. We're on record. I think this is from last summer about my fake soccer fandom.
Right.
When you reach a World Cup level of anything, I would probably watch a World Cup of cup flipping. Like
right.
if they had that
World
as a
Cup
thing,
flipping.
World Cup flipping.
Yeah. That might be a thing.
Yeah.
How about soon. Esports? Would you watch like World Cup of Street Fighter?
No, because that's not a fucking sport. But I know. My son gets on me about this and I'm like, I have no problem with it until you start calling it athletic or sports. It's like kinda how cards became a big fucking thing on ESPN, and I'm like, I'm not watching a motherfucker play cards. Like, I'm sure you're fucking brilliant.
Well, it's competition.
You know, it's a competition. Darts is a competition, not a sport. Nate, golf, sport or no?
Yeah, I mean, it's treated like
you drive
a sport,
in a car
a sport.
Between the things.
They don't. playing golf with your buddies.
No, Tiger doesn't get in a ride.
No, they walk, well, dude. It's a 3-hour walk. What they call it is a great walk ruined.
A great walk ruined by
that's like an old Scottish
wild
proverb or something.
Pointless game. Yeah, yeah.
You don't need to do Greco-Roman wrestling for it to be athletics.
I just do it for fun.
Nate's weekends.
Jiu-jitsu against guys. Yeah. Has a gi on right now. Yeah.
He's ready for it. So let me, as a brilliant segue, where death, hip hop, and martial arts come together would be the immortal Gravediggers. RZA, one of him and Prince Paul's most interesting concept
the Undertaker
albums. Yeah. I don't know
Prince
if
Paul
I like
just
that
got
for
it
Prince
from wrestling.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy Prince Paul as an Undertaker.
Well, this is the closest to say a De La meets Wu-Tang album.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Closest thing we're ever going to get. Unless that like Americo Gazway guy does like a mashup album. De La Tang.
Oh, man. Wula? Anyone? Anyone?
Wula la la. Terrible. Sunday, guys. Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. So we had the opportunity to talk with Fruquan from Gravediggers. And we also really dig the album, all three of us, which is not always the case on things. So
6 feet deep.
6 feet deep dive.
A.K.A.
Neighbor Mortis. No, it's the original working title was Nigga Mortis, and Nate was trying to relay this to me, and he kind of looked at me
like, "You're gonna have to say the original title."
And I'm like, "Why do I have to say it, Nate?"
Dave and I cannot say the original title, nor would we want to.
Exactly. Thank you.
Earmuffs on. I was not listening to that conversation.
Okay. So we had a moment, but we worked through it. I think 6 feet deep. Much better name than Nigga Mortis.
Much better title.
Yeah. Right. So we had an opportunity to talk with one of the original members, Fruquan, who was also a member of Stetsasonic, and I forgot that because I suck. But he was kind enough to chop it up with us. We'll also be doing kind of our own reflections on the record, Dad Bar Rap Pod. Dad Bod Rap Pod, we're back. Not dead yet, but, you know, there's definitely atrophy fucking happening.
Do you ever feel like something bad happens, like your car runs out of gas on the freeway, or like you blow a tire and you're just like, it's cool, I'm not going to die today?
Yeah, well, because you've gotten your bad luck. And
yeah,
I just
have a sense of it. I'm just like, you know, I probably only thought I was going to die once or twice in my life. And every other time, I'm like, yes, I acknowledge intellectually a bad thing is happening, but I know I'm not going to die.
You're probably not going to die.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, I think in some ways we're at a weird disadvantage in this society, because we will live longer than other generations.
Knock on wood,
if we're lucky. And then you just become kind of a shit. Like, if you look at our like our political situation, it's in part because you just have some baby boomer ass
right, trying to hold on
old
to
people
assets.
Trying to hold on to power right, and attention right, and all right. this shit. It's like, in times of the past, in the Great Deal, the New Deal era, you would be dead. Like, right, it wasn't totally. Like a bunch of fucking septuagenarians trying to vote
right,
on everything.
Totally,
right?
Totally.
So I'm pro death.
pro progress, that's for sure.
Yeah. So we're and this is interesting. Our podcast is kind of about negotiating that, like love of hip hop and
like
death,
right. relevance,
aging.
Right?
But that's in between, right? But the birth of your love of hip hop when you were hot and relevant, right. and full of imagination and wonder, and death. Right. And we get, I feel
in
our,
between that,
I feel our guests are all on that spectrum as well as we are.
This is slightly off topic and maybe belonged in the intro, but, I'm at the point in my life where I'm friends with some older gentlemen and all of them are obsessed with legacy. Mm. They want to either be remembered for something or do something, to like leave.
Of course.
To leave a
legacy behind.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
I think so, but at some
not
point...
Not everyone.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't think that sort of what we're doing is sort of to leave a legacy?
Legacy work? I struggle with it because at the end of the day, something newer and cooler is going to come around. Like when you're being discovered after your death is like pure fucking luck. Like that, there's no, unless you've built like, okay, Stevie Wonder has a fucking legacy, right? Right. Like he's a body of work that will live forever and ever and ever. Everything else is so toss up. I look at the things that kind of come back in vogue and that people gravitate towards, mm-hmm, and it's mm-hmm. almost like random. It's hella random. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
But I want to like touch on what you're saying, Dave, because I think your way you approach journalism is to leave these evergreen pieces.
I do.
Legacy pieces.
Yeah, so I'm projecting a little bit.
I wouldn't say necessarily for myself, no.
Mm. No?
And not in that way. Like, I don't know. I think it would be great if what we did was remembered, but I'm certainly not counting on it.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Nigga Mortis already setting it. we all love the Gravediggers' first album.
Yes, we're going to kind of treat it like a one album project for the purposes of this segment. Right.
I forgot joints. They had other releases.
I have joints on the second one, and I can't remember if I ever told this story on the pod before, so I'll tell this story really quick. When I was a teenager, I used to work at Long's Drugs, which is now CVS, and I was like really cool with my coworkers. Like we would hang out. So I worked on Halloween once, and we all worked till 10, and I invited everybody who worked that night over to my parents' house at the time. I think they were out of town. And I was like, yeah, you guys come over. Like, I have some Halloween music I'll play you. And the Gravediggers' second album had just come out. And so I put that on and we were like drinking Coronas or whatever. And the guy was like, oh, this is cool. I thought you were going to like play like some haunted house sounds.
Monster
like
Mash.
The Monster Mash.
Yeah. Like, no, dude, that's not what I had in mind.
That's absurd. That's wild because every Halloween I do this stupid exercise because this is who I am of thinking of like, yeah, what are the Halloween rap songs? So there's always Mind Playing Tricks on Me.
Nightmares.
Right. Dana Dane, exactly. If you're of a little bit older generation. Right. Nightmare on My Street.
Right. Which is not a favorite of mine.
No.
No.
You're more of a, you saw my blinker, bitch. I know. so I never think of, probably because they made a real ass album, I never put Gravediggers in that kind of, you know, I'm not playing Diary of a Madman
right.
when the kids pull up, but right. I might now. Now I have to consider it.
You certainly could.
Yeah. No, it would definitely be on brand.
Do you give out good candy or are you like a raisins? Pencil
raisins, razors, pencils and peanuts,
razor blades.
Dude, who are the people that give out the drugs? Like I've been hearing this for years and years and years, and I've never opened
That's
a Snicker.
Untrue.
No one ever gives away drugs.
People who buy drugs don't give them away.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? It's people who don't use drugs who come up with that shit.
Yeah, I'm just like, dude, I live for this some acid inside of like a you know what I mean? Some sweeties.
Absurd.
That would make the night.
I'm low on razor blades. Let's go. Like that's absurd.
But still a reason for me to rifle through my children's candy. No, no, Halloween jumped the shark. These kids don't fucking walk around. It's like seven kids. You buy 84 right. packs of candy and seven fucking kids come over and none of them know RZA. Right. So what is the point?
It's probably deemed old fashioned now, right?
It is a little bit.
I think it's a victim of helicopter parenting, right? It's like you don't want your kids wandering the streets, like especially not without you. Yeah. And then you can't get into like shenanigans when your parents are
there. That's true.
And
rough streets of Santa Clara. I mean, you know.
Dave taking it back to his to his youth. But so your long story, then this is like 96 ish.
It was the second album, so it was like 2000 something
or
98
or
something. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's some joints on the second one.
Okay.
Literally everyone except for Prince Paul is involved.
Yes,
is that it?
Exactly.
Okay, and then in the second ones, it's just Too Poetic and Fruit One.
So
it's RZA.
I think he's gone by then.
I think RZA's just the. RZA's on the second one.
Not the third.
Not
one.
The third or fourth.
Are we talking about the third? I thought we were talking about the second.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, yeah. No. That's just funny. After that.
Got it. Got it.
So
got it.
So it's kind of like this, and Fruit One talks about it, the origin story pretty well. But like Dave said, it's this kind of magical pre-Wu-Tang moment where the Prince Paul's kind of De La skit energy and really me and Dave were talking when you were taking a deuce, Nate. we were talking about...
So it was a long conversation.
Yes, it was. More fiber. So we were talking about was Gravediggers the RZA's way of really killing off the Prince Rakim character? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do know what you mean.
Like, how much farther
yeah.
could he go?
I hear what you're saying. I think yes, kind of, because the whole point of like both of these projects was to get out of that. But right. like, imagine a world where Gravediggers becomes what Wu-Tang became.
That's wild. You know what I mean?
Like, that's a totally different world.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because really, and I tried to brush on this in our interview, but really, it's the birth of the concept of horrorcore, which is not something I'm into, but
and
definitely
not
a thing.
Something I think they did purposefully.
Right.
What it really is this kind of animation and cinematic telling of like Nation of Gods and Earth's principles,
but through a horror movie lens, which is so fascinating. Like
through demons and guts and
you know.
But not even as much as like the Ghetto Boys. Like if you listen to it, it's not that. It's violent,
it's
but it's
imagery.
Like it's more like Seventh Seal than like Freddy Krueger.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
I can agree with that.
Yeah,
I can agree with that.
It's macabre, and there is gore, but it's not a ton of gore.
Okay.
I think it looks the imagery of the album is so striking it makes you think it's worse than it is.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
And probably really really tame by
well what came after
what
it.
Came after
certainly
it.
We were talking about Necro and like Ill Bill and stuff like that. That's way grosser than any Gravediggers thing. And then ICP is kind of the most like
mainstream interpretation
of it. I don't
know
what you call it. Like they take it to this like extreme Carnival of the Souls, if you will.
Okay.
Please don't.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, but it was interesting to hear Fuquan talk about it is grounded within the real kind of 5%er logic, and it's all kind of a metaphor, which I'm kind of like, did I get that at the time? Did I? I did it.
I think for me, it was like a suburban consciousness thing. Like I'm a suburban white kid, so I was like, yeah, everyone around me is the mentally dead, like none of these people are creative or have any
you
ideas.
Wrong,
like
though.
I need to be the person that like uplifts them, you know what I mean? Like I'm not a 5%er by any stretch of the imagination, but like that reasoning resonated with me.
So I could see that.
Yeah, and it's interesting, especially after watching the Wu-Tang doc, to understand how those philosophies are so central to the RZA, the whole Wu-Tang Clan, and then to also understand that Fuquan and not so much Prince Paul. You get the feeling that Prince Paul's
it's
just
all
like,
a joke to him.
I'm in it for the skits.
Right,
like I'm here
right.
to, you know, this right. is all kind
if
of.
If you look at the production credits, you'd think RZA had a big hand in this. He kind of didn't.
Really?
It's a Prince Paul album.
Okay.
RZA did some stuff, and I just want to finish my joke. If Gravediggers became what Wu-Tang did, the Statue of Liberty would be so clean. Only people who
you had to watch the documentary
get
to get that.
I have to watch the documentary,
which is our demo anyway. So you guys totally got that.
That's right.
So yeah. So it was really an amazing album, and unfortunately, I do look at it as kind of a one off.
It is type
of moment, because although they had subsequent releases, I don't think anything kind of captured.
Right. And that was the core group, anyways.
I mean. So it's one of those kind of unfortunate. Doobie Brothers kind of situations
where the
lineup kind of evolved and.
But when things kind of come together and it's just magic, I mean, that's one of this is one of those.
It's captured
outcomes.
Yeah, it's a captured magic. Maybe we won't do our full retrospective porn.
No, track by track.
No, I've gotten a little feedback on that. I think it was Southern Playlistic broke everyone's back. We did all 25 tracks in real time.
Most exciting way to talk about a record.
Yeah.
I could give some generalities. I think this is one of the greatest hip-hop records ever made.
Okay.
Top
Agreed.
10 for me.
Same.
And it's like, it's one of those things where it's like you tell everyone you love Wu-Tang, but like what I really love is Gravediggers.
Yeah,
like, I love Wu-Tang too, but like this album just means a lot to me, and I think that it's... even though it's so highly rated among like nerds, it's not really thought of in the conversation of great records. And to me, it totally belongs.
Totally. It hits all those spokes of what makes a great record, especially a great rap record.
Yeah, you have incredible artists involved, both production and lyrically. You have a unifying concept. So probably if I'm going to rate it, I'm like, it's among hip-hop's greatest concept album.
Right.
So,
a ton in common with Psychoanalysis, which was Prince Paul's attempt to
solo.
not kill a persona, but to kill his career,
right.
which ended up resurrecting it, which I think that whole like
that's
cycle
so
is very apparent on this record as well. Yeah. And that's another hugely important concept record for me, and I know for Dave.
Who's Prince Paul's Hollywood equivalent? I was trying to figure this out. What film? Because he reminds me of a filmmaker. Equivalent. What is his? Is he the
Robert Townsend?
Wow,
that's a good one,
Nate. Your cookout tickets were printed already. He went there.
Similar eras, a lot of underground hits, known to a lot of humor.
Yeah,
known to the mainstream, but just barely.
Okay, right. Okay,
that's my call.
All right,
and not just humor, but like self deprecating humor as well.
Yeah. Okay,
kinda goofy as well.
A little bit goofy. Who's my guy? God, I can't remember. He always works with Bill Murray. Life Aquatic. Who did that?
Wes Anderson.
I kind of like there's a quirky the similarity and the quirkiness kind of gives me like you know where you're in a Prince Paul thing.
Right. Everything's like a crafted jewel box.
Right.
Here's the guy with
dioramas.
The Italian voice.
Right.
The
yeah.
Italian
so,
guys.
So it's kind of like when I look at the Gravediggers album, it's the best of Prince Paul's quirkiness, but like the darkness of what RZA brings sonically.
Oh, sure.
Like
sure.
That marriage, we never got that again.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's close.
So yeah. It kind of is part of what makes this album special. There's some legit kind of skit, interlude things that really tie things together.
Right,
nothing feels extra. Like, right. Why'd you guys
And all
do
the
that?
Rapping is just so fitting. I mean, you know, like MCs obviously have like a short sort of shelf life, but these guys killed it on this project, both of them.
Totally. It's like fun to rap along to, but also hard to, because the cadences and like
the inflection
deliveries are like all over the place. Right, like there's a ton of different flavors and styles.
You're exhausted after doing a verse.
I don't think RZA gets enough credit, him especially, for being kind of wild off beat. Like, it's his own rhythm. Like, he has his own rhythm and cadence. And
on this album especially.
Yeah.
I like the wild
RZA. It's kind of like this wild staccato thing. But,
pocus. Yeah.
And also the mispronouncing of words.
Yes,
I think RZA is actually the god of that.
Totally.
It just all works here. I think, for me, the track of all tracks of this album is Diary of a Madman. Like,
love that one.
The introduction, I just kind of remember me and Traxamillion having like a bug out moment, you know, because there's a whole skit in the beginning and then the beat gets started and you're like, ah! but it was like, even some of those samples you knew already, but the way they were configured
I know, genius.
Yeah. So we encourage folks who aren't up on this record, I think it's okay to say it's kind of the Wu-Tang universe. Like,
it certainly
that's
is.
The way I think
it
about
certainly
it.
Certainly is.
You know what I mean?
I felt like it should have been in the Wu-Tang documentary, just a little adjacent.
The only thing was, I think they used some of like the unused shots from RZA's publicity photos for this.
Right, right.
But they're just like the lightest hint.
And again, but 10 minutes of fucking Silver Rings?
Nah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I can't get, there's no, they have.
Not 1 minute of Redman, but we got fucking Silver Rings changing accents.
So
right.
So
all of a sudden he's like a British dude from
Dubai
later.
That made me laugh, dude. That's really funny.
So
we forgot where he was.
It was kind of interesting to hear Fruquan talk about the kind of how it dissolved, and like he didn't take any shots. We're not going to be messy about this and say he dissed anybody, but he kind of talked about how by the time they're coming around to the third album, and you know, Prince Paul and RZA are completely out of the picture. And it's just so interesting that like such a dope concept. I think if they were a rock band, they'd still be together. Like rap has this weird thing, something so original and unique, and that spawns so many other things. Rap is, I think, one of the few genres that's just kind of like, meh, we're done with that. Was last year. Like, we're not fucking with that anymore. You know what I mean? So it's this weird, in a way, it's maybe the greatest disposable album of all time. It's like almost all the, you know, the luminaries involved walked away from
greatest
it.
Greatest disposable album. That's a good topic.
Yeah. And perhaps we'll come back to it on a future Dad Bod Rap Pod.
I mean, also had to deal with a lot of, you know, untimely deaths as well.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, which is kind of unfortunate in like the wave again to our theme about death.
Right.
This idea of like, mortality and like, what do you do? I think about this with Slum Village, because obviously I'm a Slum Village stan, but I think about that with Slum Village and I go, God, two of the foundational members are just gone. Like, how do you, and they still perform and stuff, but it's kind of like, for a number of reasons, this is like one of those albums where I'm like, why can we just get more of this. Right. Like, yeah. why didn't it ever, you know, keep moving? But
and it, the answer is because RZA became like one of the most famous people in the world.
Totally.
He didn't have time for this. Woo-wear. Basically, the other thing worked, right? I just want to tell one brief story. I went to New York when I was much, much younger. Let's call it like 21. I went to the Sound Library for the first time, which was like a very influential record store. Mm. And I bought a Too Poetic 12-inch, one of his Tommy Boy 12-inches. And like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but they had their promos were stamped for A-list DJs only.
Oh, okay.
With the like song title and the thing. I still have the record. And I just thought I was so fucking cool, man.
And like, Nate was like, that's me.
I was like, that, now that I have this stamp, that's what I am. Like,
you're like, it's me, Evil D.
Yeah. the Too Poetic song is called Peace of Mind, and you can like kind of tell like the reason Gravedigga started is because Tommy Boy mishandled all of their careers. Mm-hmm. Like, it's gone over in the Woo documentary, and Prince Paul is very vocal about it. Mm-hmm. For a long time now, but it's like this track does not suit his style at all. Right. Like, if his best work is Gravedigga's, this kind of weird 12 inch is just like, what are they doing?
Totally,
like, it's
totally.
Basically hip house. Like, whoa. it's just not like the right thing, and I don't know why.
To all the hip house fans out there, I'd like to apologize.
Any
for
of them
the...
were like, who was A&R-ing these records? Right, like, right. Who made Prince Rakim the lover man, and who made Too Poetic the hip house guy?
Totally.
Like, what are they doing?
A dude from New Jersey,
right. A mountain climber, who
yeah,
guitar.
Electric guitar. but see, here's the thing, and it definitely relates to some of what Fruquan was saying, is this idea of, once, you know, money, corporation, industry gets involved, once you're a commodity, I think rappers are kind of viewed as these interchangeable things. Nobody's going to take Jack White and be like, yo, we need you to do a hot R&B record this summer because that's what's hot right now.
Right.
But they will come to a rapper who's like, hey, you had 20 years of a legit career, but now, like, put on a shiny suit and do this because this is what's hot.
Right.
And unfortunately, we as rappers are also kind of prisoner. A lot of us are prisoner to, like, you want to be of the moment.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a lot of culture vulture shit going on with that.
Yeah, you know, for sure. And all angles.
Right.
But, you know, Gravediggers, it was an amazing, the first album, 6 Feet Deep, is an amazing record.
Amazing.
We encourage you to check it out. We like it as much as we hate Iron Man. No.
A 6 Feet Deep cut.
Yeah, the Iron Man controversy, definitely funny, but it's like when we kind of come together on a singular record and kind of feel the same way about it, I'll you know, there's some weight behind that. That's something.
Yeah.
Also, when we hate the same record. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good, not great. I don't hate that record, but I hear you.
No. We're firmly in the reactionary anti
we're just
Iron
digging
Man.
In our heels.
Yeah, forget it. This is how the brand works. So we highly suggest that you check it out. Fruquan definitely is still active. You know what I mean. So we props to him for coming on the program, talking about kind of a difficult history.
You know.
So shouts out
to him
for
his candor and honesty and time.
For sure.
Yeah. So we're you know, we are archivalists in a way, trying to kind of keep records like this alive when there's 22 records coming out every Friday. And there's a lot of dope shit. There's a lot of dope shit, but I definitely would strongly encourage folks, and I don't even say this a lot, too. It's like, sometimes old heads want you to listen to records just to pay homage to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in that. Like, when I was coming up, like, I didn't listen to the Cold Crush records. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? You know, Cats was like, oh, you got to listen. You got to know. It's more like, you have to pay homage to what was important to me.
Right.
Over the years, I've been able to go back and look at things just a little bit more objectively and say, this is a groundbreaking record. And I think with Gravediggers, that's what this is. If you go back, even, you know, it's not super current, although surprisingly current. Like,
right.
Coasting through it, it still sounds good. The beats especially, I think, are, you know, on par with some of the stuff that you would dig now. Yeah, so I think it's worth an objective re-listen to if you haven't heard it in a while. Or if you're, we need a name for our younger dad bods. We need like a who are for that sliver of the 30 and under demographic. We need a name for them. Me and my son were going over this. Every real thing has a name for their fan base. So we're going to work on that.
But
for
kids with a dad bod future.
Bod future. Bod future. Fuck.
Nailed it.
For
I was
damn.
Going like this whole other direction. I was like, pull out bods? That doesn't sound good, but you guys know what I'm saying.
Pull out gang. Pull out gang. I got jumped out in 03. But for the bod future, folks, please. Oh, please, we're using that's going forward.
That's hilarious, yeah, yeah. Dude.
For our bod futures, please go check it out if you haven't. For our tougher than leather dad bods, you know, maybe a time for a revisit. But as always, you can count on us to dredge up all of the dope memories of your formative years. We are the Dad Bod Rap Pod. Dad Bod Rap Pod, once again, always dope guests, folks who were on Monumental Hip Hop Records. Today is no different. On the line, we have Fruquan. You probably know him from his work with Gravediggers. How's it going, man?
Oh, everything is good, fam. What's good, man? I mean, you know, you got to remember, before Gravediggers was, you know, first original hip hop bands, that's a Sonic and all that kind of
right,
stuff, man.
Right,
we go
oh,
back.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. Stand corrected. That's right. That's a Sonic for our younger listeners. I think Nate and Dave were about 7 when Stetsa came out, but I definitely remember all that. Where are you calling us from today? Just to give us a
I'm calling you from the deep south right now.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what's up. All right. Well, greetings from the West Coast. We're definitely excited to have you on the program today. We are huge fans of the Gravediggers first album. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved with that project and kind of what that was like?
Well, you know, in regards to Gravediggers, you know, you're dealing with the gatekeeper.
Right.
And you got to remember it was 4 elements in the Gravediggers. It was Prince Paul, who was the founder of De La Soul, and plus he was the DJ for the original hip-hop band, Stetsa mm-hmm. Sonic. Who was the Undertaker. You had Poetic, who was too poetic back in the days on Tommy Boy. He became the Grim Reaper. You got Prince Rakim. Back in the days,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Before this predates Wu-Tang, okay. You know, right. Back in the days, you know, and he became the RZA of Gravediggers, and of course me, Fuquan, the gatekeeper. So, you know, basically, you trying to go back 30 years, you know, like, you know, basically, we was all, you know, just, how you call it, free agents.
Okay.
You know, but then again, we was all associated with Tommy Boy Records.
Mm.
In one way or another, we was artists on Tommy Boy's, then we became ex-artists on Tommy Boy.
Sure.
You know, so...
Were you also, like, not feeling the way they were handling your career, like, is kind of well-known with RZA?
If you're talking pre Wu-Tang back then, you know, when we was all putting this together, you know, after being ex-artists on Tommy Boy, you know, basically me and Prince Paul was pretty much the last, you know, to leave Tommy Boy with Stetsa Sonic and all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
You know, Prince Rakim, who was the RZA, he had his shot as a solo artist. I guess it didn't work out. Too Poetic had his thing. You know, it did good, but I guess it didn't work out. But, you know, Stetsa Sonic was, you know, Stetsa Sonic kind of put a little authority into, you know, the hip-hop culture and Tommy Boy Records. So it was an investment for that back then.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So after all that said and done, you know... Prince Paul was always being creative, you know, being that he was dealing with a De La Soul and all this kind of stuff. At this time, let's say Prince Rakim, who was now the RZA, was kind of venturing on an independent thing, experimenting with Wu-Tang Clan. Mm-hmm. You know, when Grave Diggers already began its journey into formulation.
Okay.
You know, so Grave Diggers predate Wu-Tang, for those who don't know.
Can you, can you tell us about the day you met RZA and sort of, you know, how that was like? How did he strike you and, you know, how that came about?
Well, you know, we all met over Prince Paul crib out in Long Island. Mm-hmm. You know, Prince Paul was from Long Island. Too Poetic, The Undertaker was from Long Island. Prince Rakim was from Shaolin. I was from Brooklyn. So basically, we all hooked up over Prince Paul crib, and we was just experimenting to a degree where to see if we had the chemistry. Okay. And then again, you know, we was all independent lyricists. So therefore, and you know, we grew up in the state of, you know, New York in regards to having culture, having a consciousness, growing up, you know, within the Nation of Gods of Earth, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So basically, we already knew about time. We already knew the seriousness of reality in which people wasn't seeing, mm-hmm. nor caring about. So therefore, you know, Prince Paul already had the production. He had the beats, you know, so it was up to the three lyricists to formulate the creation and form in regards of concepts and which way we want to go, because being that we was already well-known artists, I mean, for us lyricists, it made no sense trying to come out biting somebody because, you know, growing up back in New York, you know what I'm saying, you had hip-hop, which consists of MCs, you know, to a degree, whereas in that time, MCs battled biters. So you had biters who try to steal other guys' flows and rhyme styles.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we didn't want to come out biting nobody's stuff. So we already pretty much just dealt with the reality in which we was living under the conditions how we was growing up. And, you know, it basically we already knew how to construct vision lyrically. You know, so therefore, you know, we just put together some things. So we said we're gonna do something different, but make it hit the reality of the mentally dead. So basically, you know, we grew up having consciousness, knowledge of self, things of this nature, whereas we trying to teach the rest of our people who are deaf, dumb, and blind, yo, there's a different way of living, there's a better way of living, and in regards of us not trying to compete with society, whereas we have to manipulate, envy, hate, lust, and greed in order to get attention or in order to have some kind of authority in the music or film industry. Because basically, profits is made off of sex, lies, and drugs, violence, right. Envy, hate, lust, and greed. All this stuff sells. You know, so we did Grave Diggers. We wanted to open up the mentally dead, you know, just wake them up to the reality of something that's going on. You may see on TV, but it's a reality to some people because they live it.
So you had Grave Diggers is like a metaphor, right? You're waking up the mentally dead, but a lot of right. folks also look at it as the persona that you guys were kind of working in, this idea of horrorcore or horror rap. Did that really cross you guys' mind at all, that you were starting this kind of a new genre of rap?
Well, you know what was deep was that it had to be something in regards to we wasn't biting nobody. This is us. This is what we do. So therefore, we had to establish ourselves as leading by example. So therefore, yo, we already grew up. We already knew an idea in regards to creating an identity. Because we did it individually. I did it with a band. Prince Rakim, Poetic, did it solely. You know what I mean? So, therefore, we already knew how to do this. We already knew the vision. We already knew the concepts. And the thing was that in being that now, we operating in the corporate form of music and entertainment, you had to be placed with a label.
Right.
And it had to be a brand in which company or organization can sell to the public, to the mass.
Right.
Okay, so therefore, grave diggers is what we called ourselves, but our meaning was significant in regards to the ghetto and how we grew up in the hood. In regards to now connecting and being attached to the music industry, we got a vision. They had their own vision, so therefore they labeled it horrorcore. Mm-hmm. You know, in which pretty much, if you look at it visually, it looked like it's some horrorcore stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, like, you know, it's dealing with demonization and all this kind of stuff. But basically what it was smart psychology on our part as far as being artists. That's dope. You know what I'm saying? So, and then again, you got to remember, it caught on. It caught because it was something new.
Yeah, right.
It was, and you know, everything else was watered down. So therefore, it had to be something in the circulation to bring out a new spark. At the same way, at the same time, Wu-Tang did when they came out.
Right.
It was something new, different, and yo. And, you know, without separating or dividing the West Coast from the East Coast, we all in this as one because this is our property. This is what we did. This is our creation.
Right.
So we can't separate and divide y'all from us. That was our thing. You know what I'm saying? Because we speak for the masses. But yet, you know, you got corporations and company, ETC, whereas, you know, they want to keep the element of confusion going on to a degree whereas they can profit. So therefore, you know, there's the East Coast versus West Coast stuff. And regardless of what who did and what part of town, you know, there was always a stigma to it when it came to being classified through the corporation and or companies in order to market it to sell. You know, so therefore, you know, we already knew what we was doing. We represented and we just came out with Gravediggers. We just said, yo, we're going to deal with this. This is what it is. And at the same time, over Paul Cribb, we just laid down about 4 or 5 songs in one night.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just, you know, we came up with a concept. Okay, yo. One Cup of Blood, yo, you right for this? you know, just come up and be creative. So basically, it wasn't hard for us to do because it's a challenge. We're dealing with concepts. This is what hip hop represent to a degree. Whereas now, you know, where hip hop represented MCs and biters and battling, it's been codified through the corporation and or companies in the music entertainment and regard as rap music to a degree. Whereas you no longer have MCs, you have rappers.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, if you understand the system of how everything done turned around and been flipped, but then again, you got to remember, what kind of profit do we make as the inventors of music that is now controlled by companies and or corporations, whereas now they pick their puppet to keep the masses of the youth dumbed down so that they can profit?
Right. Mm.
Okay, so this is something that they know, they master it. And yet, you know, we're not trying to fight against it or challenge them or stake some kind of claim to a degree where, yo, you got to let hip-hop be hip-hop. You can't try to transform into rap music and all of a sudden, you know, you got all these unknown ABC rappers or wannabe thugs. You know, this is the new image now. So it ain't dealing with consciousness no more. It's not dealing with the awakening of the masses. Right. It's a continuation of a dumb down of the unintelligent. It's about partying, getting high, and doing drugs. You know, before it was, you know, I mean, it's to a degree, whereas now, if you look at it with rap music, you got more gang banging going on now with rap music than you did with gangs back in the days when you had hip hop, because there was a responsibility that the artists took to a degree where they said, yo, we got to do something about this, man. This stuff is getting out of hand. So we collaborated in this self-destruction.
Right.
There haven't been no self-destruction since, you know, and now we're in the period of rap music. It is no longer hip hop. It may be called hip hop sometime for those who want to use it, but It's not actually what it is. It's like Trump saying what you're seeing and what you're hearing is not really what it is.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's that kind of concept.
So did you see that shift happen kind of after Gravediggers comes out a little bit? I'd say a couple years after that, we start to go on kind of the Jiggy era, or is a little bit parallel. When do you see that shift happen? You talk about from hip hop to just pure kind of corporate generated rap. When in your mind does that actually happen, the switchover?
I think it happened when, like I said, there's no beef between East Coast versus West Coast. Okay. The thing is that the East Coast is representing conscious hip hop. I mean, always dropping science, dealing with some kind of terminology to greet, whereas yo, when you're here in the club, that's my joint, but you knew the lyrics.
Right.
It ain't just rocking to the beat. You sung the lyric, you know. And at that time when East Coast was doing conscious hip hop already spread it. Hip hop was spreading. It was beginning its journey across the globe. Mm-hmm. Okay, to a degree where if it started in the East, it got through the Midwest and got to the West. But the West came out with their concept of hip hop music. Okay, mm-hmm. But it wasn't dealing with the same concepts that the East Coast was doing, but they was trying to do it because intellectually they didn't, no disrespect. You know, but the intellectual thinking process was not the same between East Coast and West Coast. Hmm. West Coast was living a different kind of life in the degree whereas, yo, they grew up their whole lives under the colors of red and blue. Okay? That's what it was. So, therefore, it wasn't like the non-red and blue brothers and sisters out there wasn't doing their thing. It's just that they didn't have capital to start invested in themselves, whereas the cats in red and blue was already hustling.
Right.
So they already had the capital. Mm. You see what I'm saying? So therefore, this is what came out. But then again, now it's been introduced into the corporate entertainment entity, whereas, you know, these artists out there, these labels is looking at these artists now and saying, yo, there's a market for that. There's a market for that.
Right.
But, you know, what we call hip hop that West Coast was manifesting was reconstructed by the corporate entities and music industry, and basically it was nothing the same as the East Coast, and to a degree whereas, yo, we're gonna make this the official sound of hip hop now because the East Coast already did their thing.
Right.
So now y'all representing this now and gassing these guys head up to a degree where there was no communication between the artists from the West Coast connecting with the East Coast artists and saying, yo, man, let's get together and let's just do something all together. You know, this is ours. We did this.
Right.
This belongs to us. This is for us by us.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't that kind of thinking because you always had a third party intervene. It's like something I always say in the entertainment industry. There's always a beginning. There's always a before. There's always an after.
Mm-hmm.
Many groups come into the game talking about, yo, we blood brothers. We bonded. Can't nobody separate us. We going to do this. But after they get the feel into it, and then all of a sudden the exposure, now all of a sudden, you know, their global perspective of parameters, the degree of people they know, now they're being influenced to a degree whereas now, yo, this blood thicker than shit water ain't working right now, yo,
right,
because they
right.
offered me $1 million deal. You know what I'm saying? Whereas, you know, but that's the part of separating and dividing when it comes to the corporate world and third party associations. You know, into a group, which means that now all of a sudden there's somebody now who's already being hyped up to think that they're better than the rest
right.
of the crew.
Right. It, which is why nowadays you don't see a lot of crews. It's like actually a lot of individual artists in the game. But I don't want to let the interview get away from us without giving you a chance
right,
to talk
right,
about
right.
giving you a chance to talk about you have
yo,
some
I
new
got
material.
Time. I got time, bro.
Yeah, we appreciate you making the time. What tell us a little bit about your newer work.
Well, you know, you got to remember, okay. Grave Diggers did 6 Feet Deep,
right.
Pick sickle and the shovel.
Yep.
After those two joints, when I was already previous speaking about, there's always a before and after.
Right.
This is when the process started. The before and after. you know, because you got to remember, third album Grave Diggers put out was Nightmare A Minor, minus RZA and Undertaker. Okay, these cats ain't want to have nothing else to do with Grave Diggers because now all of a sudden third party entities done intervened into their consciousness and done separated them from the whole to make them think that they better than the rest. But, you know, okay, after that, me and Poetic was holding down Grave Diggers. I mean, you know, me and the Undertaker was holding down Grave Diggers. No disrespect to, you know, Bobby Digital, Prince Paul, and all that kind of stuff, you know. But what's funny is that regardless of what individuals was doing individually, it still could have had something to do with the whole. Mm-hmm. Why just forget the whole? Why not include the whole when it was the whole who got you where you are today? You know, so it's like it's the way of thinking of individuals who's supposed to be so strong mentally and know all this, but then again, wind up being savages in the pursuit of happiness. Now all of a sudden, you know, hey, somebody done brainwashed me. They told me I can get this, I can get that. All they need is me. Mm. What happened to what happened to us in the beginning? So this is the before and after stuff, you know. So I'm like, yo, if brother wanna sell out and sell a soul, more power to him. I ain't grow up like that. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So all of a sudden now me and Poetic is doing Grave Diggers. Poetic is suffering from cancer.
Mm. I didn't know that.
You know, yeah. The Grim Reaper suffering from cancer now. On when we was doing Nightmare A Minor, the third Grave Digger album. I mean, the brother was going through chemo and everything, man. I was rooting for him and everything. I was there representing them and supporting him. But yo, it was like you talking about a brother who didn't want to give up his art of being an MC, but yet at the same time dying from a natural disease. Mm. You know, that was kind of deep. You know, next thing you know, my boy Poetic passes. You know, there's no sign of Undertaker. There's no sign of RZA. You know, I mean, like, now, Grim Reaper's gone. Now, it's like, it's the gatekeeper left. So I consider myself, you know, the holder in due course now. Because I have to still represent. It don't make no sense for me to all of a sudden now change something that I'm doing when I'm gonna just keep it the same because that's how I was respected. You know, to this day I don't have no enemies. I have no enemies. I ain't never stabbed my brother in the back. Never shitted on nobody. I live a righteous life, man. And you know, brothers is looking for the riches. You know, I didn't grow up like that. I grew up like, yo, the greatest riches is the knowledge of self. Mm. You know, I know who I am. I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud of the history. I'm proud of everything that was done, you know, in the name of our people or whatever it is, however you want to put it. People can be proud of their people. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You know, but, you know, I'm holding down Grave Diggers as the gatekeeper. And, you know, since then, it's like, you know, I put out a couple of singles, my air like Into the Graveyard Chamber, One Cup of Blood, Blood Sellout. You know?
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Yo. So I'm still representing Grave Diggers. I ain't doing it on the grand scale. With no major label backing or anything like that.
Right.
I'm just putting it out just still to represent hip hop because I'm held responsible for it as an artist.
We definitely we appreciate you really taking a stand over 30 plus year career going from Stetsasonic through Grave Diggers to the present. And we appreciate you making time to be on our program. Where should folks look for you?
Besides social media access, yeah, you could hit up Fuquan Bay on Facebook.
Okay.
You could hit up Gravediggers_gatekeeper on Instagram. You can hit up Fuquan at Twitter. You know, other than that, you can go to SoundCloud and hit on Grave Diggers.
All right,
and you hear the newest joints. You hear the newest joints. And there's still more to come because I'm finishing up an album now. Basically, it's you know another thing is that a lot of MCs or a lot of past artists now has basically forgotten what it is to put together albums in hip hop music.
Yeah.
Because now they're coming out biting other artists when you was part of the foundation of it.
Right.
You know, not to mention, you know, artists is coming together and they're collabing because they don't have the concepts of putting together a whole album lyrically as one individual,
right,
as an MC. You know, so it's like, yo, you're getting old, now you're tired. You know, your flows ain't as strong as it was in the beginning.
Yeah.
And basically you got other artists on your label now, so therefore it's not really your song, it's not your album no more. It's a collab.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So it's like, yo, I still think, I still write. You know, so therefore when this Grave Digger album, it's the gatekeeper. Like, yo, these bars is all gatekeeper. These flows, yo, ain't one song that I've ever done through my history of hip hop music that I had the same flow. And that's one thing I'm proud of, yo. Lyrically, I still got it. Ain't nothing changed.
That's well.
Ain't nothing changed.
Hey,
ain't nothing changed. And I still go at it. I still go at it, yo. And this is just, yo, like I said, man, this is a responsibility, man. I'm one of the OGs. You could say, you know, people call it, yo, you a legend. You a, yo, yo, you the most underrated MC, yo. You know, it's like people be mad because, yo, yo, Fuquan, why you ain't getting recognition? I'm like, yo, I'm not worried about recognition.
Mm.
I'm building. That's all it is. I'm basically, you know, I'm leading by example, and you know that's about it, man.
Yeah.
With the, you know, another thing is that with DJs and radio personalities like y'all are ones who's helping the continuation of hip hop's legacy. Because y'all ain't sell out and stop playing hip hop just to please other people who pay you under the table to play their artists or stuff like that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So y'all ain't sell out. So I mean, it's a combination. It ain't just the artists. It's the radio personalities and it's the DJs too. That's how responsible too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we all got a part to play, and we're really glad that you could come on our show and kind of share a little bit about your history and your perspective. We encourage everybody to connect with Fuquan on social media. And yeah, man, just thanks a lot for coming on the Dad Bod Rap Pod.
Yo, I appreciate y'all, man. And yo, I got to come up there one day so we can do this live, man.
Let's do it.
So when I'm in town,
definitely,
you know, I'm, yo, matter of fact, when the new music come out, yo, y'all gonna get the exclusive.
There it is. There it is.
Appreciate
dropping
that,
bombs.
Man.
All right, y'all. Fuquan, appreciate it, man. Be well.
Peace.
No doubt. Thanks. Y'all be safe, man. Save the babies, yo.